Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
We kept our commitment, Democrats and Republicans, of sending $1,400 rescue checks to 85% of American households. We've already sent more than 160 million checks out the door. It's making a difference. You'll know it when you go home.
You know, when I think of that, it's making a difference, I don't think of it making a good difference. I mean, it's nice to be the recipient of a check, but I see the effect that it's having on the economy, on wages, on the difficulty of finding employees across the board, the challenges that it's causing. I don't see these as good effects. He didn't really dwell on that last night. Of course, that was President Biden, his first big address to a joint session of Congress. In the room watching the speech, Senator Rick Scott, our senator from the great state of Florida. Senator, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Good morning. You know, we didn't talk about sending the checks to people in prison, to felons. He didn't talk about that part. He didn't talk about the fact that, you know, this is going to take us to $30 trillion in debt. He didn't talk about that. I mean, you know, he didn't talk about whose taxes got raised. And that bill that he's talking about, these stimulus checks, you know, they raised the taxes already on people making less than $400,000, unless all those Uber drivers and DoorDash workers all are making over $400,000 a year, and if they are, then we ought to have more people trying to do that job. It's just completely disingenuous.
And the president makes $400,000 a year, so it's kind of a funny breakpoint for him to have as the cap on tax increases. But I don't get the thinking, quite frankly. See, to me, if somebody gets a dollar, it's a thank you note. The fact that somebody gets 500,000 thank you notes doesn't make them bad. That makes them really, really good. I don't know why it's important to target them, that suddenly at that point they become the ones that we should take more away from. I really don't get the thinking.
No, I mean, the Democrats, by the way, they want everything for free. The truth is, Biden's gone radical, radical, radical left, but it's not enough. They want everything free. They want your education free, your food free, your health care free, your gasoline free, your house free. Everything's free. And, you know, and if you ask people if that's popular, yeah, gosh, it's really popular. He doesn't tell you that, one, you got to pay for it, so your taxes are going up, and you can't just tax the rich to pay for all this stuff. And number two is, then the Washington, with your tax dollars, they're going to control your whole life. They'll make every decision they can for you. They'll tell you what health care you can have, what car you can have, what food you can have. They'll make all your decisions for you, what faith you can have, what family you can have. They're going to tell you everything. What's this sound like? It sounds like how we beat the Soviet Union. I mean, we're going down the most radical path that this country's ever, ever, ever gone down. And, I'm going to fight this up. But, I mean, we can't. I talk to small businesses. They can't get a worker now, because they're competing with the government. The government is saying, oh, stay home and you'll make more money. What are people going to do? They're going to make economic decisions. I mean, this stuff that he's trying to do, and by the way, there's no dollar amount that's too much. First off, think about it. We already spent over $4 trillion last year. The federal government only takes in $3.5 trillion of revenues. But last year, just for COVID, we spent $4 trillion. And this year, you add all of Biden's proposals, it's $6 trillion. Who's paying for this?
Well, I think of what you said a moment ago to me is thinking about the long term, and not even long term, but the medium term ripples from all of this. Like, as you said, if you increase the pay for federal workers, you're now making it harder for private employers to compete. If you if you send all of this money into the economy to reward people, maybe out of what seems like generosity, but you're making it easier to not work. I know every employer I know cannot find employees. That means wages have to be offered higher, and that means prices go up. And so you have this inflationary cycle. Aside from the printing of money, you have this inflationary cycle.
Andrew, I was shocked last night. Remember when he talked about raising minimum wage? I thought he was going to say $1 million so we'd have no poor people. I mean, that's like everybody to 1%. I mean, where does it end? I mean, this guy has gone off a deep end. The Democrats, they want to control everything. You know, they're in a crisis. at the border. Did he talk about that? No. Did he talk about PAC and Supreme Court? No, because that's not popular. He talked about killing the Keystone Pipeline. He forgot about that. About $30 trillion in debt that we're going to hit soon. No. He talked about gasoline prices up 70 cents since he got elected. No. None of the things that are important issues to tackle, like inflation, national debt, he didn't talk about that. Let's talk about giving more stuff away to people. That's all he did.
So what is the realistic prospect of preventing any of this? Because I'll just tell you, my own reaction as I'm watching the speech last night is I just had my head in my hands. I was so discouraged to realize just how radical this agenda is and how little opportunity there is to thwart it. What do you think? I mean, is there a way to stop this?
Absolutely. We stop this by all of us showing up and saying, this is crazy. It's doing what you do every day by explaining to people the craziness of the radical left and Joe Biden. You do it, and then guess what happens? Your listeners, they call their friends, they call people they know in the legislature, in Congress, and they say, stop. This doesn't make sense. So we're going to stop this stuff and get the economy going on again like we did in Florida. In Florida, I didn't tell everybody everything was free. Say, oh, here's a slow money at everybody. No, I said, let's act responsibly. We actually, guess what? We cut taxes 100 times. We had record funding for education, record funding for transportation, record funding for the environment. How do we do that? We grew the economy. We didn't kill jobs. We didn't say, we don't like those jobs. And by the way, this fallacy that we're going to create all these good paying jobs. I mean, where did Obama or where is Biden created a good paying job? Oh yeah, they have in federal government. Yeah, they grow the size of government. That's where they pay. So you and what your listeners are doing, you have to go to work every day, right? But what they do is they create all these federal jobs and pay people an unbelievable amount of money. Yeah, so it doesn't work. We got to stop. And so that's what I'm doing every day. But the left, they want to control your life. They want to control our whole country.
Well, it's very interesting, as I say, you know, and as you say as well, to see the consequences of this. And I'm hopeful, you know, that people get it. I'm hopeful that they'll look at, for example, this proposal to have 3 through age 18 free education, or 3 through grade 18 14 education, that all the way up through, you know, the second year of college to pay for it. If we can barely afford to pay for K through 12 now, where will the money come to fund an additional 4 years of schooling?
It's free. it's up here. Everything's free. There's no. I mean, here's the example. I am scared to death of $30 trillion of the debt.
Yeah.
I'm concerned what's going to happen when interest rates continue to go up and gasoline prices go up and home prices go up and food prices go up, which is happening. Household good prices are going up, but it's up here. They don't care. They don't care. It doesn't. Up here in the Senate and Congress, they still get paid, you know, and so it's just they're oblivious to it. I've asked Biden, you know, we talk about inflation, talk about the debt, talk about the crisis on the border. No, we don't want to do that. And guess what? I mean, think about it. They gave Vice President Harris give her more responsibility because she's done such a good job on the border. Like she's done nothing on the border. That was her job. Was that 36 days ago? She was given that responsibility. I mean, given Harris the responsibility on the border, it's like giving somebody an arsonist the job to be a firefighter. I mean, she doesn't do anything. She's never done anything.
Well, I am like you. I am hopeful for the future. I am concerned about the present and what's the damage that's going to be done in the interim. Senator Rick Scott, he is our former governor from the great state of Florida and our current senator. Senator, thanks for the time this morning. Thanks for doing what you do to get the message out. We appreciate it, sir. Be a voice for reason in D.C.
Hi, Andrew.
717 here on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
Lightning sounds pretty frightening, but you know the chances are so small. Stuck by a bee sting, nothing but a bee thing. Better chance you're gonna buy it at the mall. But it's a 23 or 4 to 1 that you can fall in love by the end of this song. So get up, tell the bookie to bet I'm not a damn thing.
100 years ago, kids in classrooms were taught the color of their skin was their most important characteristic. And if they looked a certain way, they were inferior. Today, Kids are being taught that the color of their skin defines them again. And if they look a certain way, they're an oppressor. From colleges to corporations to our culture, people are making money and gaining power by pretending we haven't made any progress at all. By doubling down on the divisions we've worked so hard to heal.
Senator Tim Scott last night responding to President Biden's first address to a joint session of Congress and talking about it. I mean, this is the kind of basic stuff that somebody needs to say a lot.
You know this stuff is wrong. Hear me clearly. America is not a racist country. It's backwards to fight discrimination with different types of discrimination. And it's wrong to try to use our painful past to dishonestly shut down debates in the present.
Most definitely. And then, you know, well, what about all these voting restrictions that are being put in? Isn't that racist, Senator Scott, who, by the way, in case you don't know, happens to be black?
I'm an African-American who's voted in the South my entire life. I take voting rights personally. Republicans support making it easier to vote and harder to cheat.
Amen.
And so do the voters. Big majorities of Americans support early voting, and big majorities support voter ID, including African Americans and Hispanics. Common sense makes common ground.
7:23 here on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Mark Jacobs is in the newsroom with our headlines. Mark?
The Biden-Harris administration now in office for 100 days. On Good Morning America, Vice President Kamala Harris echoing some of what the president said last night in his address to a joint session.
We now, as the president has rightly said, have vaccinated over 200 million Americans. The majority of adults in America have been vaccinated. Folks got their $1,400 checks who desperately needed them.
During his primetime address last night, Biden noted that for the first time in history, two women were in their places behind him. Vice President Harris and House Speaker Nancy Pelosi.
And by the way, I will fully give credit for the distribution of the vaccine. I mean, you know, yes, great work. I mean, no doubt. That's an accomplishment, and we should all celebrate that the Biden administration was able to carry out that part two of the vaccine program. Absolutely.
During his address last night, he also pushed his $2 trillion infrastructure package, saying it will provide jobs for working-class Americans, asked Congress to invest in families through a separate plan with schooling and child care. A Florida teacher apologizing because she told students they shouldn't hug their parents if they've been vaccinated. The school's CEO also admitting she was appalled. The Miami area school already made headlines earlier this week for threatening staff if they were vaccinated.
So the administrator is appalled after having sent out a letter saying that the teachers who get vaccinated are dangerous to the kids and to pregnant women, and therefore they will not hire them. And then a teacher at the school tells the kids not to hug their parents if the parents have been vaccinated because it might harm the kids.
That.
But that's the appall. That's the line.
Yeah.
That's the line in the sand. Oh my God. Just no. It's. I mean, if you tried to misunderstand the science of vaccines and the mRNA vaccine, you still couldn't get anywhere close to this. Like, I don't know where this stuff comes from. Oh, my God. Mark, thanks for the update. Thanks. I do try to talk to everybody. I try to understand everybody's point of view. There are times when it is challenging. It is challenging. There are times when I'm like, oh, I don't know that I can have this conversation with you. 7:25 on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Step inside. Walk this way. You and me, babe.
So if you haven't been following the flurry of activity in the final few days of session in the Florida legislature, let me bring you at least partially up to speed. There was a charter school bill, committee substitute for Senate Bill 1028. That should tell you a lot. And at the end, a lot of these bills, they go through their final revisions. The House had tried to add the school board term limits bill, which died earlier in the session. They tried to add this to it, and they did. And they sent it to the Senate, and the Senate said no, and they sent it back. And so the House said, okay, fine, we won't attach that one. How about the transgender sports ban bill? Let's attach that one on in here. And I fully expected that the Senate would also say no. just keep it with the charter school. Oh, no. Sure enough. Send it past that one. So that's now headed to the governor's desk. Seriously, they attached the transgender sports bill, sports ban bill, to the charter school bill in a two-page add-on. And by the way, one of the minor changes in this version of it is that your birth certificate is going to be the identifying characteristic for your gender. And so basically what the bill actually says is that male sports are all sports need to be designated as either male, female, or co-ed. Women can compete in male sports, but males cannot compete in female sports. And your birth identity of your gender is going to be the one that they're going to go by. That's essentially the bill. So that's now headed to the governor's desk. Look, I support this bill, but this is a terrible way to do government. You should not be shoving in unrelated, barely related. I mean, it's a school bill, but it's still not really related. Things like this at the last minute as attachments. This is why we kept asking about the Bright Futures bill to make sure that it stayed dead, that even though the Senate passed it, that those changes would not get attached onto some House bill late in the process when it's hard to pay attention. I hope that doesn't happen. I mean, anything could still happen before session ends. So that's just, this is no way to run a government, people. Even if right endpoint, this is no way to run a government. 437-1620, 437-1620. You also had the social media crackdown bill. Now, they're still trying to negotiate the details on this one. I am expecting this is going to wind up coming around. It's a big conversation, by the way. What's the right way to deal with these social media companies?
I'm Jennifer Kishchenko with Your Money Now. The CDC says cruising could restart midsummer in U.S. waters. The head of the maritime unit for the CDC's COVID-19 response says regulators acknowledge cruising will never be a zero-risk activity, and the goal of a phased approach is to resume passenger operations in a way that mitigates the risk of COVID-19 transmission on board cruise ships and across port communities. Indications are cruises will resume in mid-July. Fewer people are taking advantage of low mortgage rates. Mortgage applications decreased 2.5% in the latest week, even as interest rates fell, but home prices keep increasing and inventory is low. Jay-Z is getting into the fitness business. A 51-year-old musician and business mogul, whose portfolio includes entertainment group Roc Nation, streaming service Tidal, Cognac, and new cannabis brand Monogram, is investing in at-home fitness equipment brand Lit Method. The fitness company specializes in strength training, cardio, and physical therapy. That's Your Money Now.
Why do I want to be the police chief in Pensacola? What greater honor, what greater duty is to come back home and serve my community that I grew up in? My entire family still lives here in the area of Pensacola. So I have a vested interest in the success of this community.
So this is Eric Randall, who is one of the finalists for the police chief in Pensacola. I know normally we talk to Mike Wood, but I thought, the most pressing issue facing the PPD right now is obviously this impending choice of the new police chief or the, or making Kevin Crispin the permanent. That's still a possibility. So you got Eric Randall, who's the assistant chief of police at Newport News in Virginia. He's from here. John Orlano, who is the chief of police in New Mexico, one of the largest agencies there. And then Booker Hodges, who is the assistant commissioner of law enforcement for the Minnesota Department of Public Safety. Think about FDLE is kind of like, in that same kind of category. So he is the second in command over the entire state. And that honestly raises questions for me is why he, in an interview he did a year or two ago before he took that job, he talked about that being his dream job. He's a community activist. He used to be a youth pastor, I think, back in the day. He ran for governor. He was 5 years the head of the NAACP there in, I think it was Minneapolis, not Minnesota. And then he became a cop, and he's worked in law enforcement ever since. And he's been at this agency, that agency, a couple of years here and all around the place. And now he's leaving Minnesota for the very first time from an agency that is far bigger than ours.
My name is Booker Hodges. I'm the assistant commissioner for the Minnesota Department of Public Safety. I oversee the Minnesota State Patrol, the Minnesota Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, and the Alcohol and Gambling Enforcement Division. We currently have about 1,400 employees, a $225 million budget.
Why is he leaving a dream job of that size of an agency after all of these years working there in Minnesota to come here. I don't understand this at all. It's weird. I mean, that's not a step up for him, right? So then you have John Orlano coming from New Mexico. Why does he want to be here?
Why I want to be police chief is mainly for family reasons. Family is all over Florida. I seem to be the oddball not being in Florida. And due to some elder care issues as well, looking at relocating to Florida where I can have the tail end of my career be in Florida where I intended on retiring. That's the main reasons why I want to be here.
I'm coming here to ride out my career near family. I mean, that's weird too. So I watched this whole interview yesterday about an hour and a half, not quite 2 hours, I think, something like that. And I'll tell you what I came away with. I've read all their resumes. They're all on paper very qualified. And even in person, they all seem very qualified. They are, okay? And, you know, obviously the question is them versus Kevin Christman, the acting chief of police. I think Kevin is very qualified as well. The mayor has said as much, that any of these guys would be qualified to run the department. I think that's true. The question is, what's the best choice now, right? What's the best choice now? And my argument all along has been, look, Christman is a no-risk choice. Everybody knows him. Everybody loves him. He's an extraordinarily capable law enforcement agent. And there's no downside to giving him the permanent job because what's happened since he's been the interim chief? I mean, is there some big problem that's taken place in the last 6 months? No. It's been great, right? Everything's running well, as you would expect. So that's the choice against which these have to be measured. That being said, I fear, although I hope it's not the case, I fear that the mayor is committed to hiring one of these guys. That's what I think is likely, okay? I hope that's not the case, but I fear that's likely. And if it's among these three, Randall, by far. Again, all three, I think, are plus candidates on paper. But in terms of what I've seen both on their resumes and certainly in terms of their connection with Pensacola and their attitude and the things they said yesterday, Randall, by far. And I will tell you, I've talked to several other people in and out of law enforcement, and every single person has had the same exact opinion. Yeah, based on what we saw yesterday, Randall, you know, that's the person out of these three. So what is it about him that makes him stand out? Well, obviously being from here definitely helps, but he's kind of got a perspective on how to do things that's innovative as a way of trying to solve some of the problems that all law enforcement agencies deal with. And I think he's got a pretty good track record in Newport News. I had originally been skeptical about him because he's only an assistant chief, right? So I'd been kind of that his qualification level didn't seem to be that high. But here, listen to him for a second.
These two individuals have been able to train law enforcement with a very proactive and progressive response to domestic violence. You know, we're responding to domestic violence situations where there may not be an assault, but they're indicators. So what happens then is a referral is made to the domestic violence team, and then this domestic violence team makes a proactive reach out to the individual before domestic violence happens and provide the wraparound services and the support of the police department, which is unheard of.
So what he's talking about is that when you go out on a call and you see kind of the warning alerts about maybe domestic violence or potential future domestic violence, don't just ignore that. You know, if there's some way that we can follow up and do some kind of prevention, do some education, some outreach, maybe not through the department, but maybe through other agencies as well. See, that's good preventative policing. That made sense to me. He said one of the things that they've done is, law enforcement is often seen as hostile to certain communities, and they created a homicide victim support group where the police will sit down with, and he sits down with, homicide victims' families and just makes sure. And look, a lot of the stuff that he's talking about, PPD already does. Don't get me wrong. They're very cutting edge in terms of the things that we're doing. But I liked the things he was talking about that he's done in Newport News.
One of the things that I do right now, I chair a homicide support group from the police department side of the house. That's very unusual. But we have received rave reviews, and each time we meet once a month, I get an opportunity to speak with families at their most trying hour to show that the police department, me as a chief, care about the loved one, them and their family, and the loved one that they lost.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense to me. is being able to just build that relationship, right? And he's a big tech advocate. They've implemented ShotSpot, which is that triangulation technology on your cell phone so that when a gunshot goes off, you can immediately go to the scene, even when nobody's called. Okay, and he was talking a lot about values and coming back to Pensacola and helping the city grow and develop, and it was good. I mean, this is a solid candidate. And again, the other two are as well. I just have questions about why Hodges is leaving Minnesota, and Orellano kind of comes off a little bit standoffish, aloof, stiff, and didn't have a lot of innovative ideas. There's nothing particularly wrong with him. I didn't get that happy vibe, you know, about somebody who's passionate about coming here. They all said, you know, PPD is great as is, not an agency in need of massive reform or anything like that. And, you know, again, Randall, just kind of like, man, I just want to come back here.
When I talk to people around the country, when I go places, when I was in the military and when I'm currently in law enforcement, and I tell them, they say, where are you originally from? I say, Pensacola, Florida. They eyes light up with glee and glow, and they'd be like, you're from there? I said, yes. They talk about the environment, the togetherness, the white sand beaches, the weather, and how beautiful of a place that they wish that they can go. So for me to come back to the community and to serve as your chief of police is a great honor. I do not take it lightly.
So obviously there's a lot there, and especially being from here is something that is appealing. I still favor Chief Christman. I still think that he would be the best choice. If that's an option still, that's the best choice. No risk. I think the mistake was going down the path of trying to recruit from somewhere else. But of these three, if we're going to have to pick one of them, clearly Eric Randall stood out yesterday. And, you know, just kind of one thing I will say is this process, you've heard me talk about this a lot. I've been very frustrated with this process. And I don't like to be that media guy who's kind of raking in the muck, looking for the problem, hoping to find one. I'm always hoping to not find it. But every step of the way in my, and I don't do a lot of investigative journalism. Okay, it's a radio show. I don't have time to do it, frankly. It's been frustrating. Like, for example, I asked for the reviews of the candidates by the 5-person panel. There isn't one. Like, what I got in my public records request was an email about the results and the question, but there was no matrix, there was no scoring, there was no evaluation. They didn't do it. The document was non-existent. How do you have an HR panel that's looking at hiring somebody and they don't do some kind of an evaluation? So that makes me like, oh, what's going on in this process? But again, I was more reassured yesterday seeing the candidates and seeing that they really are pretty outstanding, one more so than the others. So we'll see what the mayor decides. There's more interviews to be had today. You can watch those as well online. I don't know if I have it in me to watch another 3 hours worth of interviews today about these guys, but we'll see. 748 News Radio, 92.3 and AM 1620. Again, if you're just joining us late, we normally have PPD on right now, but I figured this was the thing most pressing for them, and it'd be worth me talking and sharing some with you about the interviews you watched yesterday.
Al-Qaeda and ISIS are in Yemen, Syria, Somalia, other places in Africa, in the Middle East, and beyond. And we won't ignore what our intelligence agencies have determined to be the most lethal terrorist threat to the homeland today. White supremacy is terrorism. We're not going to ignore that either.
So, first of all, I agree that domestic terrorists come in many shapes and sizes, including white supremacists. Do I consider that the greatest threat to our homeland? No, not really. Last I checked, being a racist in public was, there's not much worse you can be. You know, good luck getting a job, for example. We are a culture that is not particularly at risk of that nonsense taking over. So, you know, more worried about domestic white terrorists than worried about international terrorism. I think that's probably a mistake. But, you know, okay. I mean, I hear where you're coming from, but I don't see it. You know, it seems so far-fetched to me. But we should always be looking, and that's what law enforcement agencies do. They're always out there looking and investigating and trying to prevent stuff, and I appreciate that. 752 on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Mark Jacobs is in the newsroom with our headlines. Mark?
As President Biden marks 100 days in office, he says America is on the move again, talking about what he's accomplished so far in his first address to Congress, including vaccinations, stimulus checks, help putting food on tables, and preventing evictions. Gas could be in short supply this summer. Patrick DeHaan with Gas Buddy.
Think Orlando, Florida with Walt Disney World, Yosemite, Yellowstone. Some of these areas don't have enough gas stations or truckers to be able to meet what could be a very high summer for gasoline consumption.
Reports earlier this week that the trade group National Tank Truck Carriers estimates as many as a quarter of all gas tank trucks don't have drivers. And a huge flock of birds calling a house in California home. Just saw the video.
Oh, my God. I saw the video, too.
Oh, my goodness.
That's craziness.
Family in Torrance. They were bombarded with birds. In fact, it looked like the whole neighborhood. More than 800 before they lost count. Animal control officers told them, oh, keep your doors open.
If you've ever seen, think of just a neighborhood like your neighborhood after like a hailstorm.
Yeah.
Only they're birds.
They're birds.
That's what it looked like.
Oh, my goodness. Albert Hitchcock would have been proud. Animal control then. Yeah, just leave the doors open. That didn't help. The family had to go stay overnight at a hotel and then come home to what I'm sure was not a pleasant sight in the house.
Have you ever had a bird inside your house?
Loose?
Yeah.
No.
Oh, it's terrifying. Because I've had a bird and a bat, and they're both unpleasant.
No, thank you.
A very difficult thing to solve. think about like you're trying, you know, when you're trying to catch a fly, not a slow one that's sitting on something that's always giving you the chance, but the fast ones that are just buzzing all over the place.
All leaving the door open does is let more in.
Right, exactly. Yeah, only it's a massive fly, and it's scary. Mark, thanks for the update. 7:54, Davis Allen. Time for a quick shot of sports.
Well, that sound, I only play it once a year. That means it is NFL draft day, which means Roger Goodell, who's fully vaccinated, by the way, is going to be on stage, getting booed, hugging all the players that come on through. And yes, by the way, he can hug the players as they walk up onto the stage. And the first selection should be coming in around 7 o'clock tonight. Trevor Lawrence is expected to be the number one overall pick out of Clemson. He's a quarterback going to the Jacksonville Jaguars. It's all but confirmed, but we expect that's what's going to happen. Again, starting at 7, you can also catch coverage on our sister station, ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM and 99.1 FM. That coverage begins at 7 o'clock. Down in Tampa, the Valspar Championship teeing off down there at Innisbrook, and Bubba Watson currently two shots off the lead. He's playing in this tournament. And I had mentioned yesterday Michael Vasecki. He's out of Sarasota. He's the guy who played in all these little amateur tours and managed to clinch a spot in. Well, he'll be teeing off his round in about 10 minutes, and I'll be keeping tabs on him. Always love a good underdog story, and he certainly fits that description. And a scary incident for Bryce Harper, star outfielder for the Philadelphia Phillies, took a 96-mile-an-hour fastball to the face. I got hit in the arm by an 80-mile-an-hour fastball one time and thought I was dying. Well, imagine getting hit in the face with a 96-mile-an-hour fastball.
Terrifying video. Terrifying to watch.
But he's all good. CT scans are coming back clear, but still, thank goodness. Thank goodness he is okay. And congratulations to the Gulf Breeze High School baseball team. They clinched their third district title all time yesterday, beating Escambia 13-3. Took it to him, run ruled him. So congratulations. It means a lot to me. I played at Gulf Breeze High. So go, guys. Go,
I love all my baseball teams. But I love whoever wins.
Yeah, go that team.
Like, I can't be excited that they beat Escambia because both in our listening area, right?
Does that mean you're a bandwagoner?
I'm just happy somebody won and they had a good time doing it.
Go sports.
Go sports. That's go right. Sports. Now it's us versus Orlando. It's us.
Absolutely. Go.
And you have the right to say Gulf Breeze because you went there and played on that team. So fair enough.
Yes.
Good. I'll take it. 7:58 here on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Oh, my goodness. We are in, kind of in the final moments of the Florida legislature trying to figure out which bills are going to pass, which ones are not. There's a flurry of activity. More fun to come today. I really wanted to talk this morning about the online bill, the pushback against Twitter and Facebook. It's fascinating stuff. It really is. We just haven't really had a chance today with all the other things that have been going on. And then, you know, Joe Biden gives his hour speech last night. And, that's my reaction. If you want to summarize, what was Andrew McKay's reaction to Joe Biden's speech? It was head in the hands intermixed with nails gripping to the edge of the table. You know, and as I do kind of like Ted Cruz's summary, is boring, but radical. It's hard. That's pretty much on point. Boring, but radical. We'll be back in just a minute.